I'm Julie Fouché, and you're listening to Beyond the Barbell.
All right, guys, welcome back to Beyond the Barbell, presented by Reebok. I am Ben Alderman.
I'm Blair Morrison. We're sitting here with Julie Fouché, four times CrossFit Games athlete, sponsored by Reebok, Rogue, Pure Pharma,
RX Smart Gear.
RX Smart Gear. Beyond the Whiteboard.
Beyond the Whiteboard. The
just look around
on.
All the tents
yeah.
and then just start saying those names.
Julie's picture is all over Carson, whether she's competing or not. I think generally, if there was a CrossFit sweetheart, I think it would be you.
Oh, well, thanks. That's very nice.
yeah, so thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I know. It's been a long time coming. I think we tried to do this last year, but you were very busy.
We did.
With your own podcast.
Right, which I was just starting last year, so now it's been about a year since it's been out.
All right, well, tell us, how's it been going?
It's been great. I first thought of the idea of starting a podcast probably around March of last year. I knew it was going to be my last year competing, and I was trying to think about what I was going to do to still stay in touch with the community and to try to contribute something and try to tie in what I was doing with CrossFit with my school and my medical background. And someone suggested the podcast, and I thought, okay, that's a great idea. And I've also just, I think from the opportunities I've had in CrossFit, I've gotten to know so many amazing people, and I love hearing different people's stories and experiences. And so the more that I could share those stories to a wider audience, I wanted to help do that. So I committed to posting one podcast every 2 weeks this year. I knew it was going to be kind of a crazy year with school, so I didn't want to overcommit myself and promise something that I couldn't deliver on, but I made it a year. I posted something every 2 weeks, and this year coming up, I'm hoping to try to even improve the content that I'm putting out and hopefully eventually be able to put out more content more frequently for people.
So your goal was to stay connected with the community through the podcast.
Right.
Has it worked out that way? Has it gotten you the feedback that you wanted as far as that goes?
Absolutely. I think it's been cool to see the response from people that are listening or even being here at the games, and how many people have come up and said, oh, I listened to your podcast. And, you know, you put that out there and you don't know how many people are going to tune in or listen. And so it's been great to have that feedback and then to start to have conversations about things outside of CrossFit Games competition and things that I'm passionate about, like health and nutrition and just trying to helping people change their life and use fitness and their lifestyle to overcome disease has been a really cool conversation to have with our community.
Well, that's kind of been your mission in the medical field, right? Being a doctor is
right.
You want to see doctors prescribe functional exercise, right? As well as instead of pharmaceutical drugs and everything like that, right?
Exactly. I think that, you know, I think that modern medicine has its place, and I think that there's a time and a place for the therapies we have, and they're amazing, and we can do amazing things, but not in place of having a foundation of a great lifestyle. And that means nutrition, that means exercise, that means helping people, you know, have a positive attitude, surround themselves with positive people, have a strong sense of purpose in what they're doing with their lives. I think all those things play such a strong role in overall health. And so the more we can help people have that in place, the less need we're going to have for these drugs and treatments long term. You know, I'd like to see, you know, sometimes they're necessary, but I'd like to see people see those as a bridge to ultimately changing their lifestyle, not needing those things long term.
So Blair and I have kind of talked about things like this before. You know, like a guy who's building a house, if you only give him a hammer, he only knows how to, he just tries to solve every problem with a hammer.
Right.
Is it because the medical community has really only been given those tools and they're not really thinking outside of medication and things like that? Are they getting everything but just choosing to focus on the
Great question, Ben.
That's a very good question. You know, we we in medical school and in our traditional training don't get a lot about nutrition. We don't get hardly anything about exercise other than it's good for you. And so I think it's lacking in the education, and that just kind of permeates into the culture of medicine. I think there's also a lot of influence of pharmaceutical companies, and then the way our system is set up and the way that reimbursement has been set up to be more of a disease care system and something that's going to help people cure disease or look healthy on paper, but not necessarily prevent disease from happening in the first place.
It's all symptom-based.
Right.
Right? Yeah. And what you said about not getting a lot of exercise education in med school blows my mind.
Right?
It's like, nowhere will you learn more about the body and, like, histology and all these different things that you have to go through in medical school. It's unbelievable the amount of information that they pack into the 3 to 4 years that you're doing this.
Yeah.
And literally nothing about, like, functional movement, how the body actually moves and works and, like, gets through its lifespan in the world.
And which I have to say, too, I am in a MD program, and there are DO programs, which is sort of a different philosophy of medical education, but we kind of end up...
What does that stand for?
Doctor of Osteopathy.
Osteopathy, yeah.
And we sort of end up in the same place. A lot of us do the same residencies together or end up practicing together, but in those programs, there's a lot more emphasis on the body and how it moves, and they learn a lot more about manipulation and a lot more hands-on, and then prevention. And so there is some of that philosophy too, but I was even talking with someone last week who was a DO and saying how they get the education, but then once they start practicing or they're in the system kind of beats it out of you. Like, it's not a regular part of what doctors are doing, the majority of what doctors are doing. And so I think it's highly underutilized. Even by people who have that training to begin with.
Sure. So there's problems on both ends. Like, educating doctors, maybe the DO program is better, but still, once you get out into the actual world practicing medicine, and you get your patients coming in, and they're expecting a pill.
Right.
A lot of times.
And you're
having,
you know, you're limited to by your most of the time for office visits are 15 minutes, 20 minutes, and you know, it's a triage situation. You're like, okay, your blood pressure is super high. We need to get you a pill right now so it can come down. There's not enough time to talk about long term. How are we going to change your diet? How are we going to change your exercise to get that down? You know, we can recommend you need to eat healthier, you need to exercise, but there is that gap in, okay, how do I actually implement this into my life? And what do I need to be doing? Like you would get in a CrossFit affiliate, having a trainer actually show you this is a movement and this is how you put workouts together, and this is what you need to be doing.
Well, if that's the reality, how do you want to change it? Like, if you only have 15 minutes with your patients, like, say, in 5 years from now, you're like, yeah, okay, I can give this guy a pill to lower his blood pressure, but really, he needs a lifestyle change. Like, how can you affect that change from the role of MD?
Right. Well, it's an adventure that we're going to see how it plays out over the next few years, but I think we are, even as healthcare is starting to change, you are starting to see more reimbursement for preventive services. I think people are starting to realize that, hey, we have a huge problem in our country, and it's not gonna be fixed by, you know, continuing to do what we're doing. We need to start to address these problems at their root cause. And I've also, at where I go to school at the Cleveland Clinic, they've also started to do a lot with functional medicine, which has that philosophy of getting to the root cause of the problem, and there they have a much better system set up where you have more time with the patients, at least up front, the first visit being longer, and then plugging them into the programs, like whether you plug them into a CrossFit affiliate or into, you know, a nutritionist or someone who's going to help them make those changes, a health coach, make those changes on a long-term basis. So kind of having that whole network of support.
Well, that was kind of gears towards my question. It was, is the medical community changing its stance? And it sounds like it's slowly happening, or is it happening rather rapidly? I mean, are people starting to really, really get it?
Oh, I think it's very slow. I think anything in the medical system is going to be very slow to change. And I don't know what the statistic is, but I've heard, like, when you have research studies proving something, like even from smoking, like we had research studies proving that smoking was causing lung cancer for like decades before it was actually mainstream, and we were putting in a big effort to get people to quit smoking. And I think the same thing, I think we're kind of in a second wave of what happened with smoking now with nutrition and with sugar. And I think I'm hoping that we can be a little bit faster about how we make those changes and how we implement the way that we're practicing. But it's slow. It's a, you know, it's a big system. There's, it's slow to make changes.
So for you, life changes are happening a little more rapidly than the medical community is changing. You've completed your CrossFit career, or supposedly retired, but right. I saw you at regionals.
I was, yeah.
So you kind of pseudo retired
without the boot this time.
Without the boot,
yeah. Sans boot. talk a little bit about that decision. Like, you made the decision going into last season.
Right.
You already said that in March. Then you suffered an injury, which was pretty well documented, but with your ruptured Achilles.
Yeah.
Talk about kind of before the injury, you making that decision. Hey, this is going to be my last go around, and then what you had to go through, you know, physically and mentally during the injury and recovery process.
Sure. So I always knew that 2015 was going to be my last season just because I had to finish school. My school was, you know, great about letting me take an extra year, which allowed me to keep competing as long as I did. But it's, you know, it's hard to take that time off and still keep up with everything that's going on. And I knew that finishing school was important to me. I know that that's my long-term career, and so, you know, I didn't really have an option. So I knew it was going to be my last season, regardless of how the outcome went. And after the injury, it was definitely heartbreaking at first because that's certainly not the way that I wanted to end my competitive career. But I was very overwhelmed by the support I got at regionals and then following. And I think that made it much easier for me to walk away and feel like, okay, something positive still came out of this, and, you know, kind of move on to school. And I think that that helped a lot, too, was having that new goal. And I knew that I was going to get back into school. My lifestyle, like day-to-day life, dramatically changed because instead of training as my priority, school is my priority again. And I had that new goal to shoot for. I had rehabbing my Achilles was sort of a new goal that I was working towards.
Super fun goal to shoot for, yeah.
Right? And then, well, I also had the goal, so I was getting married a couple months later, so I knew I wanted to walk down the aisle and not be limping or anything. So that was motivating.
Now I just feel like a jerk for saying that.
And then we had like just bought a house. We moved into our house. So there was a lot of things going on that kept me focused and kind of distracted and not spend too much time being upset about how my season ended. So overall, I'm very happy with, you know, my CrossFit competitive career.
So if we can rewind a little bit to 2015, right before your Achilles rupture,
yeah.
What was the goal that season before the injury?
Sure. The goal was always to win the CrossFit Games. I had come close. I got second in 2012, then third in 2014. And every year I learned so much about myself. And I think I learned what I needed to do to be in a better position to win. I felt great. Like, I think I had the most fun training for 2015. I was really comfortable kind of with the process and just enjoying the training, which was very rewarding. I met some personal lifetime CrossFit goals that I had been always wanted to achieve, like with my snatch and my clean and jerk and just like a couple other benchmark workouts that I knew I wanted to hit. So that was very rewarding. I was feeling very good going into regionals and going into the games. That was definitely the fittest I've ever been.
If you had to speculate, do you think you had what it would take when you look at the workouts that came out that year? Do you feel like you were prepared to execute that goal?
I think so. You can always speculate, and you never know. But I think I had as good a shot of everyone as anyone else. You know, in that top 10 women, I think I would have done well.
Looking up back on it now, are there any being here as a spectator this year?
Mm-hmm.
And you were here last year, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
If you could point to like one thing about competition that you're going to take away or that you miss, that you look back on fondly, what would that be?
Oh man, there's so many things. I think like things that I've learned that I've put
no,
implemented
the things
in my life
that you
or, like things
enjoy.
That I enjoyed about competition.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the best feeling is knowing that you put in everything, you did everything you could and you're so prepared for something, and then just starting this competition week, having that feeling of like, I am in the best shape of my life. I did everything I could to prepare and I feel great. And no matter what the outcome is, I know I'm prepared for it. It's the best feeling for sure. And I think that you can take that into your life without whatever you're doing, whether you're preparing for a meeting or whether you're preparing to take a test. I've always enjoyed that feeling. Like even in college when I would take tests, like knowing that I was over prepared, you know,
right.
it's a good feeling to go in with.
I was just imagining going into a boardroom meeting, and be like, I'm the fittest I've ever been. I can't wait to get after this board meeting.
Right. It's true.
I know that's not what you meant, but like,
yeah, pep talk.
So
yeah.
Good. He's going to crush this meeting.
I feel like anytime I'm into a test, I feel like how I approach running workouts. I'm like, oh my gosh, I did not prepare enough. You know what I mean? So I'm the opposite. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's the opposite for me, but what are you going to do?
A little more nerve-wracking that way.
I'm curious now, you know, as your focus has shifted and it seems like you're really comfortable with that, which is awesome. What is your training regimen for you personally look like at this point in life? And, you know, do you see it changing at all?
Sure. So this year, I set a goal for myself that I wanted to train 5 days a week for an hour. I thought, okay, that's reasonable. I just want to get in the gym and make sure I get that done. And what has been so helpful was my husband and I worked with one of my sponsors, Beyond the Whiteboard, to create a training program where basically we write the workouts 5 days a week for an hour, and then we share exactly what we're doing, and anyone can subscribe and do it with us. And that, having that done ahead of time, knowing that we walk in the gym, we start the clock, we're going to just be in and out in 60 minutes and we're going to get a great workout. And then knowing that we have a community of people around the world who are doing it with us and holding us accountable has been huge. I think that there are so many weeks during this year where I would have just said, screw it, I'm going to bed. I don't need to work out today. I'm tired. And I knew that I had to because I had that community of people who were looking to me to be doing the training. And we also have a great group of friends that we work out with in Cleveland. And so knowing that I have to show up to the gym every day and work out with them, I think helped a lot too. And so my training this year has been a lot more about just well-rounded GPP and just getting the work done. I don't care that much at all about how much weight I'm lifting or what my times are. If I do the workout, I'm happy. And usually what happens is I'm in there, I'm doing the workout, and I'm working out with other people, and they're going to push me, and I'm going to end up pushing myself harder than I would have otherwise. So I end up getting a lot more out of myself. And I've been happy with it. And then kind of as we talked about, I always said, well, I'm going to do the Open. I'm always going to sign up and do the Open. And back in the fall, I was talking to a couple of friends who just put the idea in my ear of, well, do you think you can qualify to regionals? And I thought, I don't know.
I don't know.
I'm going to just do the Open. We'll see. But it really did put the idea in my head. And I said, you know what? I'm going to set that as my goal. I think we always need to have goals that we're shooting for. And I said, okay. I didn't really tell that many people, but I said, okay, that's my goal. I'm going to try to qualify for regionals. And it did push me. I think I got more out of my workouts leading up to the Open and during the Open, knowing that I wanted to ultimately place, you know, and make it to regionals.
Right. So it's like you took your competition goals and like rolled the wheel back one
right,
peg.
Right.
So like regionals is now your games.
Right.
And
exactly.
Open became your regionals, right?
Exactly. Except I think once I got to regionals, I still was a lot more relaxed than I would have been at the games.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
It was a completely different experience. It was so much fun. And I know how it feels to be there and to be trying to make it to the games and how much pressure you put on yourself, and it's the most stressful situation. And to be there and just be completely relaxed was so, you know, it was so weird. And it was so weird to be around the other girls who were so stressed out, and I know how they feel. And then to be able to just be like, well, I'm just going to have fun. I'm just going to go out there and do my best and to not really care that much about the outcome. So it was a very different experience. It was a lot of fun.
Do you think you'll still do other competitions for that kind of fun outlet? You know, we had the guys from Wadapalooza on, and that's kind of the MO of that competition. Elite athletes go there to have fun.
Right.
You know, there's not a lot of pressure.
Right.
But they just get to enjoy the community and get to compete. There's still something that fires you up about being out on the floor.
Oh, yeah. You always get more out of yourself in that environment. No matter what level you're at, you can always learn something about yourself and get more out of yourself. Even I remember last year doing the Oh my gosh, now I forget what it was. It was the Olympic lifting, the CrossFit.
The liftoff?
Liftoff. I did that. That was sort of the first thing I did after I was recovering from my Achilles. And I hadn't really lifted that much weight. And it, you know, I was surprised by how much I could do because I hadn't done anything in months. So it always brings out more in yourself. And I could see myself doing some of that just for fun. But
if it fits in.
Yeah, if it fits in and, you know, if it makes sense to do at the time.
Talk a little bit about your relationship with your sponsors now that you are no longer competing, officially kind of pushing for that top podium spot. Yeah. I know Ben and I talk about this. We're 34. You know, we're our competitive careers. You know, we're closer to the end than to the beginning. And I think every athlete who is sponsored.
That's like an understatement. Yeah. That's an
understatement.
Maybe
closer to the end.
Yeah,
than
Probably.
That's definitely.
We are definitely.
Certainly.
Twilight of our competitive
career. But, like, guys,
career.
You know, people that have been in the arena for a while, and they worry about that. You know, like, will sponsors still support me? What value do I have outside of competing? You seem to have transitioned seamlessly from one to the other and still have a longer list of sponsors than Ben and I combined.
It's like from athlete to ambassador, right?
Right.
And you've kind of just... And
you're still bringing value. Talk a little bit about that and how other athletes can learn from you.
Sure. Well, I think I've been lucky in that I always had sort of a longer-term goal than just my competitive career and the way that it happened. Like, when I first started competing in CrossFit, I was already well on my way to applying to medical school and starting medical school. I think if I had found CrossFit a year or two earlier and had gotten really into it, I might have postponed medical school altogether, and we could be sitting here and I could be just...
You know who
starting,
did that?
You know?
Annie Thor's daughter.
Right. And you know, like, now her life is taking a completely different direction, which is, you know, probably for the better because she's influencing, I think, a lot more people doing that than she would have if she just went to medical school. But I got lucky in that my path sort of went along concurrently, and I just constantly was reevaluating every year about how I was going to balance the two. But knowing that I had that bigger purpose or that bigger goal at the end, I think has helped me a lot. And I think it does come down to figuring out, okay, what are you going to do after you're done competing, or how are you going to transition? Are you going to be, you know, do you run an affiliate? Are you going to be a full-time trainer? And kind of what, how are you going to bring value to the community or to another community once you're done competing? So I think that's sort of an important question to answer. And then it just kind of comes naturally, like, I know that finishing medical school is the most important in becoming a doctor and doing my residency. And if I have sponsors that fit into that picture and they want to support me doing that, and there's a way that I find that they, you know, they can still help me bring value to people, then I'm so happy that we've been able to continue some of those relationships.
You said you were lucky and kind of the way you found CrossFit and the timing of everything.
Yeah.
But was there ever a time where you kind of struggled with that battle, where you were like, man, you know what, maybe I should postpone medical school and maybe I should focus, you know, purely on CrossFit as a competitive sport?
Sure. I think partway through my first year of medical school, so I competed in 2011, which was like a month after I started medical school. That was my second games. And then basically during my first year of medical school, I was really doing both full time, and it almost broke me. And that was a very transformative year for me because it forced me to step back and ask myself, why am I doing this? Why is it important for me to keep competing? Why is it important for me to be in medical school? And I remember having one specific, you know, when you start competing, you just kind of keep going because you can. And, you know, like, oh, I'm good at this. I can make it to regionals. I can make it to the games. Like, of course I'm going to do it again next year. And a lot of times people don't stop and ask themselves, well, why do I want to do it another year? You know, it's a big commitment. And so once I had that stress on me, it forced me to ask myself that question. And I remember one conversation I had with my mom, and she was like, well, why don't you just, you don't have to compete. And I, you know, you could, we'll still love you just the same. She's like, you don't have to compete. You don't have to, you can drop out of medical school today and we'll still love you just the same. And that, for some reason, that clicked in my mind to be like, oh, you know, I don't actually have to do this. But then I realized that I wanted to do it, and that really shifted. And I asked myself why, and that really shifted my perspective and made it more manageable. And then after that 2012 year is why I took a year off, because the second year of medical school was just so much more demanding And so I kind of had to, you know, there's been years where I've been more CrossFit and more medical school, and so I've just tried to realize when one had to take the back seat and one had to take the front seat. Yeah.
If you could give one piece of advice to girls out there, mm-hmm. young girls, teen girls who are coming up, looking up to you and other CrossFitters and wanting to compete and do that thing, what would that advice be?
I think it would be to just have fun. I think to play sports, you know, do CrossFit, do whatever you're enjoying. But you don't have to get competitive too fast. Like, you have so much time, and the more well-rounded that you're going to be, whether you're playing three different sports or you're doing CrossFit classes or, you know, you're just running around doing stuff with your family and your friends, that's going to prepare you more to be ready to compete in CrossFit games. Like, the more experience you can get, the better. I was always lucky that I did gymnastics growing up. I did track and field. I tried a bunch of different things. Like, even certain experiences, like, I did a lot of skiing growing up and, like, snowboarding, water skiing. And then my best friend in college kind of taught me how to swim just on a whim. Like, I was like, oh, I want to learn how to do this and be able to actually go and swim laps. And so she taught me how to do that. And it came back in 2011 when we had to swim in the ocean. And I felt, you know, perfectly comfortable because I had been swimming laps. And then also, like, a vacation I had taken to Dominican Republic where I got really comfortable jumping in the ocean and, you know, being comfortable with the waves since I lived in the Midwest. So I think it's just as much as you can, get a wide variety of experiences, have fun, do whatever makes you happy. There's, as you get older, there's time and place to start being more competitive, but don't put too much pressure on yourself too early.
So between, you know, doing a little bit of CrossFit here and there, newly married, and your career, do you have time for hobbies and things like that, or is that it? I mean, is that kind of your
life? That's pretty much my life. It's pretty much, like, school takes up the majority of my time, and then, you know, working on the podcast and the program with my husband, and then, you know, we try to at least one night a week have, like, a date night where we're just not doing anything else, just spending time together. Spending time with our friends, our families. We love to go out to eat. That's like, if we get extra time off, we'll go out to eat or hang out somewhere. I mean, I still love to ski, but I maybe go once a year, you know.
There's a lot of big mountains near Cleveland.
Yeah, right? Well, I grew up skiing in Michigan, so there's a lot of small hills, but it's a lot of fun. But I'd like to go out west at some point.
Go out where?
It's been a long time.
Skiing out west. Michigan skiing.
Because we are west now.
We're as far west as you can go. Unless you're talking about skiing in Hawaii, I guess.
No. It's been, we, like, as a family, we used to go when I was younger, but I haven't been in a long time.
Is your family still in Michigan?
Yes. My parents spend their winters in Florida, like most retired Michigan families.
Right.
But they are in Michigan for the summers. Yeah.
And do they do CrossFit?
They do. So my mom does more. My dad tried it. He did, like, the intro classes and did some one-on-one training. But he hasn't been as big on the intensity of CrossFit, and he kind of likes to do his own thing. So they do a lot of bike riding, and he'll walk the golf course and stuff like that. But he's more into, like, practical, like,
golf gets in the way of my dad's CrossFit a lot, too. Like, my mom is all about it. She almost, I mean, she qualifies for the Masters.
Wow.
She finishes the Masters Open and gets to do the regional, you know, extension.
That's awesome.
But my dad, it's like, golf season is, I didn't realize golf season was so long.
It's a big deal.
It's a really big
deal. And now my dad goes to Florida for the winter, so it's really a year-round sort of thing.
It's a year-round sort of thing. Yeah. He doesn't want to, like, impact his swing and be sore on the course.
Yeah.
I'm like, Dad, just get on the rower or something.
Right. Well, my parents,
if you're listening
to
this, Dad, Julie is telling you, get in the gym.
Get in the gym. Yeah. No, my parents do have a rower, so they use that. And, it's been good.
Are you finding it, now that you've done your 5 days a week, 1 hour a day, you're in the class. It sounds like you've had, like, a fundamental shift in what fitness means to you. Do you still find yourself able to get the type of intensity out of your workout that we all know is necessary to, like, really drive that type of fitness?
That's a great question. It's a challenge, and I find relative intensity has been a big concept for me this year, because a lot of times when I'm in the gym, it is like after I've been working all day and I'm exhausted or I haven't eaten in a long time. And so the type of intensity I get is very different than it was last year when I had everything very scheduled and very regimented. But I do get that intensity, and I think the way that I find it is, one, working out with other people who push me, because I otherwise don't think I would be able to find it by myself. And then especially with certain, like, benchmark workouts, or I'll look at a workout and I'll decide what I think I should be able to do, and it's a scaled down version of what I, maybe my Fran time was, I think my best Fran time was like 2:12 or something, and now I'm like, okay, I want to get under 3 minutes, and that's my goal for today, and that gets me a pretty good dose of intensity. So it's kind of about setting those goals, realistic goals, and then shooting for them in my workouts.
So, you know, okay, so Fran's a great example, right? Like, your Fran time now is not what it was a couple years ago, right? Are there any workouts or movements that it kind of gets under your skin that you're not as good at anymore? Or are you just completely okay with all your fitness kind of, like,
taking
a step back? Yeah, exactly.
Not really. I think my skill set is still there. I just may not be able to do as many reps as quickly. Like, I still want to make sure that I maintain all of my skills. Definitely, I think the hardest one for me is the snatch, because for me, that was a really mentally challenging movement. And last year, I was able to work through a lot of, like, mental barriers I had when I would try to PR my snatch. And it took a lot of effort, and I just haven't gotten anywhere close to it this year. But it does bug me, because I know I'm capable of it, and my clean is, like, within a certain percentage of what my max clean has been, and my snatch is just way lower. And I know it's just because mentally I'm not putting in the same kind of effort. So that's a little frustrating, but something that I'm sure I'll at one point focus on again.
Yeah, we could just see Julie just going to the American Open in a couple of years, like, Dr. Fouché. Being announced as Dr. Fouché.
You talked about your skills, and I think that's kind of cool for you to touch on. And that's, like, you still have the skills, right? But maybe you can't do so many handstand push-ups in a row, or maybe you can't do 200 feet of unbroken handstand walk, but you can do 100 or something like that, right? When you see new skills come out at the CrossFit Games, like, not new, but, I mean, strict ring handstand push-ups for the girls?
Yeah.
Is there a kind of inkling in your head to go, like, oh, well, you know, I haven't really practiced that at the rep schemes they are.
Sure.
I need to do that one. Or are you kind of like, I don't care about adding the new skills as long as the skills I had before were there?
Right. Well, that's a great question. Certainly when the new stuff comes out, I want to see if I can do it. And I want to start, like, now this is an important skill set to have. I want to add it into my training. And I definitely wanted, like, actually, this is a funny workout because I actually tested it a week or two ago.
The ring or the pegboard?
The ring. And just to know, like, okay, I can actually do this movement. That's good. I wasn't fast, but I could at least do it. That's reassuring for me, and I want to always still be learning. Like, I'm not going to just settle for, okay, I'm going to constantly be at 80% of where I was when I was in 2015. Like, that's kind of maybe my new normal, but I'm still always trying to improve and, like, learn new skills and set new PRs from that new baseline.
That's the really fun part of CrossFit, I think. Yeah. Like, if you ask an average gym member, what are the two best things about CrossFit or, like, this gym training? Well, three best. They're going to say the community, number one, because that's what everybody always says. But if you just, like, take the community away and just talk about the actual training, like, the number one thing that everybody likes is getting stronger. And the second thing they like is learning new stuff.
Yes.
You know, and so
it's
like,
so true.
No matter what level you're competing at, it's always fun to try and learn something new, right?
And there's always stuff to learn.
And there's always stuff to learn. That's what's so great about it. Like, there's no real confines or limits on how far, you know, in the gymnastics direction we can go, because none of us are Olympic gymnasts.
Right.
None of us are doing that stuff great already.
You know? Right. Like, I just wonder, like Dave Durante or, like, my gymnastics coach back home, like watching the ring handstand push-ups and just them cringing at like
vomiting,
you know,
all over it.
The bent legs and the not pointed toes and how, you know, terrible everyone's body position is. But I have no doubt that we're going to see much more challenging gymnastic skills come up over the next like 3, 5, 10 years. So it's cool to see how we're pushing those limits.
Right. And we talked to some of people over the course of the weekend who said, this is, even though that movement was really ugly and poorly performed almost across the board, it's going to get better, and it needs to be put out there in order for people to train it and practice it, and for the judges to see it and know they're going to watch it back on video and be like, all right, his knees were definitely bent. Like, probably shouldn't have given him that one. Right. And that'll get stricter and better and better.
Got to start somewhere.
Got to start somewhere. I think Ben might be able to do that one already. He's a handstand pressing machine.
Yeah, I mean, the shoulder, you know, that's... It's kind of my jam, right?
It's kind of your jam.
And I haven't retired for medical school yet, so I'm still training a lot. And
how about the pointed toes, though? I don't know.
The pointed toes? I have trouble extending my leg to straight. You know, I have mobility issues.
Just as it is.
Yeah, so I'm in constant, you know, hamstring tension, pulled super tight.
So, you said this year you're going to be pushing to get more stuff out on the podcast, but once a week maybe? Or every 2 weeks still?
We'll see. We'll see. Okay. At least... Maybe towards the end of the year, we might try to go once a week, but we'll see.
People want to follow that and be involved in the podcast or just follow what you're doing with everybody. Where do they find you?
Yeah, you can find me at my website, which is juliefouché.com. I have the podcast there. There's a link to the programming there. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher. It's on YouTube as well, so there's lots of ways to listen.
You video all of them?
I do. I just have GoPro. It's not a very exciting video, but it's, you can see us having a conversation.
You guys aren't doing like jumping jacks in the background.
No.
I always thought about that. Like, what's actually going on the audio files? The guys are like, just, you know, they talk about weathermen wearing like underwear and a suit top.
Right,
below the desk.
That's what we usually do.
That's what we usually
do. Unless we have female guests on, then we try to be decent.
Right.
Yeah.
He's put on like some pants.
Yeah, exactly. Stay modest.
And then for us guys, at BTB Podcast on Instagram and Snapchat, Beyond_Barbell on Twitter. And download this episode, rank it, tell everybody how much you love Julie.
Give Julie a 5-star rating.
Give her
a
5-star rating.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is probably going to be our last one from the games, I think, right?
Yeah, unless somebody sneaks up and grabs us as they want to do an interview. But for the most part, I think we're wrapping it up from the 2016 CrossFit Games.
Yeah. Thank you, Julie, so much for taking the time. I appreciate
it. Thank you guys for having me.